Well, this is it. This is exactly what the PGA Tour did not want to happen. Here we are. It's Masters Week, and yet the golf world continues to remain divided. And Mike, I am reminded of a quote that came out in Golf Digest. This was on December 31st, which was the original framework agreement deadline. And when that was extended, here's what was said. They said, two sources familiar with the discussions told Golf Digest, the hope is to finish negotiations by the Players' Championship in March. There's also an unspoken directive not to allow unresolved discussions to carry into April. Sources had told Golf Digest this, as the tour does not want to take away focus from the Masters tournament. And yet that's exactly what's happening here.
It's going to be the full focus.
Yeah.
The whole week. That's what they're going to be drilled on.
Sadly. Because this is something that we've harped on continually here on the show. We said, you know, at some point we need a resolution. And you know, I'm going to pose that question to you guys in the comments as well. Do you feel like we do? And we're going to talk in a minute about some of the suggestions that have been made. We had very vocal John Rahm, you know, sounding a bit more like himself again. I'll talk a little bit about where we felt like he kind of detracted from that in a second. But John Rahm speaking up, saying that he'd like to see 72 holes come to live. And is that something that could bring them closer together? But I think the worst part about this is that not only are we here in Masters Week and we haven't had the announcement of what's happening, we're just as in the dark as we've ever been before.
Right.
With no real, and we talked about this last week, you know, we had a little bit of stirring around when the PGA Tour Player Advisory Board had gotten together in the Bahamas with Yasser, and there was some good, seemingly good that came out of it, but that was it. Quiet again. And a perfect example, we're hearing this on both sides. Recently, Brooks Koepka said, and he was asked, and as you said, they're going to be asked in all of the press conferences about this.
13 live guys in the field this week.
Yep. Then they're going to ask on both sides. And when Koepka's asked, you know, what's going on, he said, nobody knows. We don't know on our side. They don't know on their side. So it just shows you really, ultimately, we're as in the dark as we've ever been before. And this is that nightmare scenario for the PGA Tour, where now where the Masters is kind of an informal opening of the golf season for many of us. It's a celebration of the game. And yet, what are we going to be talked about? You're going to have guys from Phil Mickelson to Brooks Koepka to Tiger Woods. You know, it's everybody's there. And they're going to be in front of that podium, and the questions are going to be asked, where are we at? And where we should be talking about Augusta, we should be talking about the Masters, and that'll be in there too, but there's no doubt an overshadowing here.
Yeah, it's all going to come down to which one's going to have the most information and who wants to share the most. You know, there's guys on the board, there's guys like Cantlay, they might drill into him. They might drill in. I mean, these reporters are smart. They'll drill into the people who's on the board, and they'll drill into the live guys and just ask them, you know. And I'm curious to, like, the press conference I'm interested in the most is John Rahm's. As defending champion, A, I'm just excited to see what he says about coming back and everything like that. But then, you know, they're going to hit him hard because he's been the most vocal. So they'll hit him on the 72 holes. We're going to get more answers out of him in the coming 24 hours.
I agree. That's what we're going to see. It's very predictable. But my question is that what we want? You know, as someone who enjoys watching the Masters every year, is this the narrative that we all wanted? Now, there may be some who say that they enjoy a bit of drama, and it's going to be interesting in that way. You know, you think the Netflix cameras rolling and all that type of stuff. But what I've continually said here on the podcast, what I worry about are the casual viewers, the people who are not in this week in and week out like we are. Are they going to be put off by this as we just see on full display just how far apart these two really are? One other side question for you too is, do you think we see a LIV golfer win this year?
Very possible. Brooks. I think Brooks is on a mission.
He is. You know, they asked Brooks, you know, about his desire to win and stuff like that. And it's tangible. We know it about the majors. But he was asked recently by about his prep for the Masters.
Yep.
And kind of in typical Brooks fashion, he said, when March comes around, I go to work. I shut everything off. It feels like the rest of my life doesn't even exist. I just go and play golf and try to win at Augusta. So if that doesn't sound like you got a motivated Brooks Koepka coming in there, and feeling much better, Brooks Koepka.
I like Brooks, and you know what? To be honest, I think like a sleeper pick, and I know it, he hasn't done well in the past, but a guy like Bryson, you think about it, this guy won the 2020 U.S. Open, so his exemptions are running out. There's a chance he might not get back to Augusta for a couple of years,
yeah.
You know, with world rankings and like that whole debacle. So there's guys who are definitely heated, like Neiman.
Right.
That dude's on a tear.
And you know, Neiman, remember, received that his special invitation exemption into the Masters. But there are a number of guys who just did not. Right. I think there were seven or eight of the live names, big live names who are not there because of they just don't have the qualifications. Yep. Guys like Paul Casey, Mito Pereira, Taylor Gooch. This is where that division creates an issue. For as much success as, for example, Taylor Gooch has had on live, it does not in any way translate over. I would say, Gooch has not been his own best friend in a lot of the stuff he's said, and he's been ripped for some of the comparisons in a way he should just play golf and not speak, because it doesn't do him any favors. But it's just true. It's like, this is where that happens. And you're right. There are going to be certain guys who don't have lifetime exemptions. They're not Masters champs, who are going to start to see that slipping through their fingers. And a guy like Bryson DeChambeau, if a deal does not happen, if official World Golf Rankings does not come the way of LIV, which we talked about on a previous episode, they've wholeheartedly given up on even proceeding and trying for them.
Yeah, right.
There's going to become a point where he has a lot of years left in his prime that part of that may play out without exemptions into majors.
Yeah.
So it's just one more reason and focus of why we really need to make something happen. And it just makes me wonder, and we're going to dig into what John Rahm said here in just a second. But I think what John Rahm said kind of sheds light on this idea. And I wonder if this is what's really the biggest problem. And that problem is that on the PGA Tour side, maybe the players have a little bit too much control and say over what happens. And conversely, on the LIV side, maybe the players just don't quite have enough.
Yeah.
Remember, the structure is just wildly different. Like, we covered this in our last episode of the podcast. We talked about Paul McKinley, who's an ex Ryder Cup captain, his comments, and it really did kind of shed a light and kind of show the inner workings of why there was a struggle here. And he talked, you know, they asked him if there's a deal was coming in just the previous weeks. And he said, don't hold your breath, which is turning out to be true. We're not seeing the deal announcement. But what he had said was, it could be a few more years before we see any kind of daylight, unfortunately. He said, remember, what makes this so difficult is the PGA Tour is a members organization. It's one man, one vote. Although the likes of Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Tiger Woods will have a little bit more influence because of who they are, ultimately, it's a democratic members organization. Trying to get a consensus to move forward is incredibly difficult. And I've said before, I think what's make it more difficult is the lack of communication. I don't want to call into question the leadership of whether it be Jay Monahan at the top as a commissioner, or even on the Players Advisory Board, the guys like Tiger and Patrick Cantlay. But when you see this much confusion, to me, it's always an indication that there's a leadership issue.
Sure.
And leadership is one drives and really holds together the communication that should be happening.
Yep,
right. And right now, apparently, as you can see by this Koepka quote we just read, it's not just fans, it's players who are in the dark as well.
Totally.
So on the one side, you have almost, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, and they can't come to a consensus on the PGA Tour side. And at least this is what, again, we have to speculate. We have no other option because we're not given the direct information of what's being said or done.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other side, you've got LIV, and it makes you wonder, the structure of that, do the players not have enough control? Here are guys who are...
They voice their opinions, at least.
They can voice their opinions.
Which we're seeing.
But they're not voting.
Right.
Right?
I don't think they
they're paid a lot of money to come over and play. You've got team owners. I understand that. They've got a little bit of say over what goes on with their teams.
But the league-wise... by the league.
Right.
Yes.
There's no... You can, as you influence anything, you can speak up. You can voice your mind. But it's not the same as having a vote.
Right.
Right? So... kind of where do we go from here, right? So let's just quickly talk about, I want to talk about what Bryson DeChambeau has suggested, and we can debate that in a second. But the big news this week, John Rahm, as you said, he's going to be asked the questions.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what John said is sounding a little bit more like the old John Rahm.
Yes.
Feels a little bit 180 in a way, but let's
he's got PGA Tour FOMO.
He very well could. He's got
a lot of money,
500 million reasons to not care anymore, right, about what's going on there. But John Rahm, who is someone, and we'll get into this in a second, but he was one who was very critical of LIV's 54 hole format, mm-hmm, no cut events. He was critical of all that.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Then he kind of went the other way, seemingly, when he went to LIV. It seemed like almost a structured red statement. But now he's kind of coming back around. And in a recent interview, what Rahm had said is, if there was ever a way where LIV could go to 72 holes, I think it would help all of this argument a lot. The closer I think we can get LIV golf to some other things, the better. I think it would be for some kind of unification to feed into a world tour or something like that. I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I definitely wouldn't mind going back to 72 holes.
Sure. Why can't they? I mean, even if you think about it, if you watch the LIV event, they all tee off at the same time. It's like going to work from 10.
Shotgun start, yeah.
It's like I'm working from 10 to 3 today. I don't have a 9 o'clock tee time. I don't have a 6 a.m. I don't have a 3 p.m. So I think like it could be probably easier for these guys to tack on a fourth round in this shotgun format. It just adds another day. They do a practice round anyway, right? So, I mean, like, why can't they just do that and come together and, like, imagine their LIV? I think that would be the stepping stone to getting something done. I think you need 72 holes to even start the conversation.
I guess the question is would that be an existential kind of crisis for LIV, feeling like they are, in a way, bowing down to or the demands of the other leagues, the PGA Tour, the official World Golf Rankings, whoever it may be, and getting away from what they originally was their mission statement? Would that be almost like, for them, feeling like they're taking a step backwards? Because remember, LIV came out with a whole lot of, you know, pomp and circumstance around this idea of being golf but louder, being different, and wanting to be different. So if you want to be different. You know, in this way, it's kind of like saying, well, in order for us to move forward, we have to be more the same. So I wonder, from their standpoint, from a viewability standpoint, from a fan standpoint, do we want another product that is effectively the same as the PGA Tour but different, with different players on different days? Or do we want something that's unique and totally different? Yeah. And if so, where's the slippery slope end? Does then the shotgun starts end? The other thing, you know, shotgun starts one thing, whatever. Mm. It is what it is. It's just a kind of a way to go about it. But more so, it's the 72 holes and it's the no cut. Do they introduce a cut? Do they start to bring more players in? Now sounding more and more and more like the PGA Tour. And then do you ask the question, why do we break apart in the first place?
Right, right. I know. Well, let me ask you this question. What does LIV benefit the most out of a deal getting done?
That's a great question, because what I'm starting to see is that it feels like the longer we go in this, the more that the scales are tipping that the PGA Tour is the one who needs to get the deal done.
Right. I feel like it benefits them more.
Because as
the state of their game is declining.
Right.
As a result of this craziness that's going on. Because
let's say it this way. If we took the majors away for a second, majors to me become like the only left catalyst of driver of change for LIV.
That's
right?
It. Yeah.
Because otherwise, if you've got, and we have to take them at their word and assume they're being honest and not just lip service because the amount of money they're making. Mm-hmm. We hear the players on LIV saying that they're enjoying it, that they're loving it, that they don't regret their decision. They're happy that they went, right? We're seeing LIV making gains in all of those other areas that had held them back before. More and more broadcast rights, visibility, viewership is going up. They're turning into the international circuit that they want it to be. Mm-hmm. They're opening up new doors with these new different travel bureaus and things like that. And they're getting paid in certain events,
yep,
to come to different countries.
Sure. Yep.
On top of that, you know, we recently kind of talked about it and reported on this, that they're now starting to get more sponsorships.
Yes,
you're seeing apparel deals come in. Things are moving consistently in a right direction for LIV in that way, and what they desire to have happen.
Sure.
And as you heard from Greg Norman, as you heard from Phil Mickelson, nothing happens overnight. They're treating themselves as a startup. They know this is a slow and steady process. So they're happy doing their thing over there. That is what it is. The only motivation at some point it becomes for them to get together with the PGA Tour, in my eyes, and if I'm missing something, you guys drop in the comments, let us know. But the only motivation that I see is having some sort of equitability where they can get the official world golf rankings and find their way into majors. And now Greg Norman isn't even approaching this differently and trying to have the discussions directly with the majors and saying, can you come up with a qualification outside the official world golf rankings for LIV golfers to continue? But beyond that, I see them have being less and less motivated to be involved with the PGA Tour.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's, again, what you just said, it just comes back down to just add that extra round. Because if you go back to the World Golf Rankings, you're like, we're 72 holes now. Like, you can't say no to us at this point.
Well, they can. They still no cut.
Well, make it that way.
But now they're taking two big changes.
Yeah.
That's the slippery slope I was talking about.
Matt, like, if we screw up at home and our wife it gets angry with us and we know we're right, sometimes we just agree that we're wrong. You know, like, just bow down to me. Let's just get this done because it benefits all of us. LIV wants their players in the majors. No doubt about it. Helps them. They want them.
I just honestly think that LIV is now in a position where they don't feel like that's their only way to get that one goal. And again, if I'm missing this, you tell me. There's something else that they want. But I think that the only thing that they have left that they want, and I think these guys would be perfectly happy to carry on with the league that they've created.
They don't
want to
come back to PGA Tour.
I think there's a few guys who miss out on a few events. And
just a few events.
Waste management, or maybe a place where you were a previous champion.
They stepped out of the spotlight. It hurts, you know, to
I
show up at the
that.
For ROM. Yeah.
For sure. But I think that they've got enough going with their own tour that they might be perfectly happy, minus the majors. Now, what I wonder is LIV say, well, listen, we can fundamentally change the structure of LIV. And like I said, it could be a little bit of an existential crisis on their behalf. And that might be the gateway to the official World Golf Rankings. But it seems, based on what Greg Norman had said and how they're withdrawing their application for official World Golf Rankings, they're thinking there's more than one way to skin this cat. Mm-hmm. And the other way is continue doing what we're doing, building the entity as it is, establishing it, and then work directly with the majors to say, what's the other way in?
Yeah.
Now, we've even seen it other ways where guys, maybe LIV changes the way that they structure their schedule so that guys can go and play in U.S. Open qualifiers, Open Championship qualifiers, go and play in the Australian Open or other types of sure. Open championships around the world that the Masters and the remaining two would be the Masters and the PGA Championship would look to and say, okay, that is now a qualifying event. If that's a qualifying event, everybody go and play in that or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's as simple as just saying, fine, we'll do that. Now, what I do think though is this is the first time where it's now coming from the inside where a big prevalent name within LIV is now asking for 72 holes. It's no longer where an outsider,
right.
A PGA Tour member is saying LIV needs to be X, Y, Z. And it just makes me wonder how much of that will be a true catalyst for change.
I bet every player on LIV would exchange world golf ranking points on LIV for an extra round of golf. I don't think anyone would say no to that.
Yeah,
so I'm going to get a chance to get back to all these majors and go back up their line rankings. I just got to show up an extra day.
I just wonder.
It was great while it lasted 54, but let's do it. You know what I mean?
I get it. I just wonder if that really would be the thing that would punch the ticket.
If it would.
I think the 72 hole is very important. I think the no cut is also very important.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about big changes. Now, the other thing, Bryson DeChambeau had made a suggestion kind of like of where, like, and again, this is all from speculation of where do we go from here because we don't have the answer as the most important aspect we're talking about today. But Bryson said, you know, he wanted something like almost like a Super Bowl format. He said, just, you know, you can look at the NFL and you could see, you know, and you could have like an NFC, AFC sort of working in their own fields. And then at the end, they come together, put on a huge event at the end of the year. So he's likening it to the NFC and AFC as two separate leagues.
Okay.
With their own teams, et cetera, and they come together for the Super Bowl. I think this would be almost like four Super Bowls. Let them come together for the four majors is what he's ultimately suggesting. I don't think it's a perfect analogy. I get what he's trying to say. I get there's merit to it. It's not a perfect analogy because it's not as though in the NFL, the NFC and the AFC are playing under different structures. Mm-hmm. We still do have two different structures. 54 hole no cut, 72 hole cut events.
The golf world's divided. I don't know if that would bring it together. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's like, I won't watch AFC football. You know what I mean? Like, I will. You know what I mean? It's on TV, just like the NFC. So it's a tough analogy.
In a lot of ways, you're getting the same product. So if you live in a certain, you know, city, and then your team happens to be in the NFC or the AFC, whatever it may be, you're turning on football. You're watching football. You're watching the same product. Here in this case, that's what I'm saying. What do we want? Do we want the exact same product in two separate leagues? Or was LIV from the start meant to be something different? Was it 54 holes, no cut? Yeah, was it meant to be something different?
I think so. I didn't think it was meant to take over and be the only golf league.
I think the better analogy, instead of NFC, AFC, is NFL, XFL.
Right.
Right? Because you do have some different structures in the overall, the way the game is played.
Right. And would you want to watch, you know, the Chiefs play the XFL's best team in a game at the end of the year?
Yeah. This is where the analogy starts to break down.
It breaks down.
Ultimately, because, you know, it's not the same. The NFL as an entity still draws the world's best players, sure. Right? And I think what we're running into the issue is, and the argument is, that there's no longer one singular league that draws the world's best players, because now so many of the world's best players have gone to LIV. You really do have, enough has been detracted away from it that you can't say one league has all the world's best players. And the only time we see the world's best players are these majors.
Yeah, which tells me that the ratings this week, I mean, the golf world, like, they thrive on this week. They thrive on these 4 weeks, right? Yeah. So, like, they see these and they go, like, how do we do this every week? How do we do this? That's what's going to lead them to say, we have to get something done.
Yeah.
We can't just operate independently.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk in a second about whether or not they owe us an answer, or if the golf world can truly live like this in
just
limbo forever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, at some point, do you have to rip off that Band-Aid and just say, it's not happening. A deal's not happening for the sake of the game in some way. So let's hold on to that thought and debate that in just a second, but let's first do a word from our sponsors.
All right, this is the week. This is the week of our meetup. We're getting together.
We've got
over 40 people coming. It's Westchester.
Watching the Masters. Speaking of it, we'll be watching it together. Yeah,
I know. It's going to be Masters on TV. We're going to be playing golf indoors. And we're going to do it at Golf Zone Social in Scarsdale, New York. That's in Westchester, New York. And if you don't know Golf Zone Social, it's the most social experience in golf. It's got the best technology, hands down, in indoor golf.
The floor moves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you guys have seen it.
150 different courses you can play.
Exactly. And we've done countless stuff there. We've even held a whole tournament there last fall. And we're going to continue to keep doing those. So this is in that series leading up to these tournaments where we're just going to get together, guys, hang out, play golf, meet a lot of you. And if you're in Connecticut, New Jersey, you know, New York, if you're in this surrounding area, you can get over there. It's like a happy hour thing, 4:30 to 7:30 this Friday night, April 12th, Golf Zone Social in Scarsdale in Westchester. It's free and we're giving away stuff. So why not? Come on down. We'll see you guys there.
And look, as we all strive to get better, you guys know, to be your best today, you have to outperform the player you were yesterday. And for some, it might be breaking 80. For others, it might be breaking the course record. And for all of us, it's playing a golf ball that we know will help us get the most out of our game. So the Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X, these are balls that you guys know we've been playing for a long time. They offer advanced technology and performance that rewards your best swings and helps you shoot those lower scores. Both models, they're exceptionally long, deliver consistent flight, and they feature that unrivaled control. The Pro V1, it's the best combination of distance, spin, and feel in the game. It delivers that penetrating ball flight. We did a fitting not too long ago. That's where I really found out that ball flight was just right for me, and every golfer is different, so doing those fittings is so important. Mike, you use the Pro V1X. It flies a little bit higher. It spins more in the short game, but it still gives you that low, long game spin. It really maximizes your distance. And it's also, as we can see, and we're going to watch it this week, there's a reason why Titleist is the number one ball at the Masters. You know, when it really matters, whether it's players like us or all the way at the highest level, they rely on Titleist. They trust Titleist. So go and check out the Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Find out which is best choice for you at Titleist.com.
And what was cool, a couple months ago, we were at the PGA show in Orlando, and we went in the FootJoy booth, and they had all their new shoes lined up. It's such a cool display, right? There's so many shoes, all these different colors, are just like pops right in your face. And one of the ones caught our eye was the FootJoy Field LX.
Yeah, caught a lot of people's eyes.
Right. It's so unique, this shoe. And I'm going to show it to you because I have it here. If you're watching on YouTube, you get a treat because you get to see this. And so check this out. So unique, right? So this is the FootJoy Field LX. I mean, they're super sleek. They're made with this chromo skin leather, and it offers this beauty, this awesome fit. It's kind of like classy. It's like something you'd go into like a nice outdoor event, but you're still playing golf. And it's got that classy feel, which I love about it. It's the Premier Series. So it's a series you're familiar with. This is just a new shoe in the Premier Series. So it's equipped with those low pro spikes. They give you that stability and support from the moment you step onto the golf course. They're so stable. Like, I love this shoe. I have a feeling we're going to be walking a lot in this.
I got a feeling you're going to see a lot of guys in that this week at Augusta.
No doubt. No doubt.
Mark my words. It's, yeah.
What's funny is, and I don't know which, I got the blue and I got the white. They got the navy white and the white. I don't know which one I'm going to wear first. But guys, you got to check them out for yourself. The season is coming. Go to FootJoy.com, check out the Field LX, and check out all of their awesome shoes that have dropped this season.
So as we watch another deadline come and go, the question that I have is, What ends this endless loop of speculation? You know, can we, you know, as golf, as an entity, you know, as a sport, survive another full year? Let's say hypothetically, we make it through a full another major season, which the majors, once they start coming, they come fast and furious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Before we know it, we'll be at the U.S. Open. Before we know it, we'll be at the Open Championship, the PGA Championship. Is this something that would continue to live on in limbo, where we're just unsure whether there's going to be a deal or not, and then every time we're going to have the same questions, and then it's going to be a new lineup of faces that made it or didn't make it because of the current structure? You know, or is there a certain point where, if for all the reasons we've talked about here, if it can't happen, if there is just, they can't get enough of a consensus from players on the PGA Tour side, if there's not enough motivation anymore on the LIV side to make something happen, is there a certain point where we just rip that Band-Aid off and say, you know what, guys, it's not happening.
Yeah.
We're going to operate separately and just let the cards fall where they may. Is that better at some point to just do that? It really just makes me wonder what the next steps are.
I always laugh because I remember the Office episode. I don't know if it was Andy Bernard or if it was Michael Scott. They had the whiteboard. They were doing pros and cons. Like, I feel like they're in a room with both sides going, all right, guys, pros and cons of this thing coming together versus not. But in all seriousness, I honestly think if I were the PGA Tour, you are right now still are the most watched golf product out there. You're the easiest accessible to watch on TV. You have sponsorships. Yes, you may be losing some.
Yeah, I would say as yet your ratings are slipping and you're losing sponsors for your biggest events.
Yes, I'd say fix that problem, right? And make, and just go foot on the pedal. And you got great guys, these guys, Jake Knapp, like all these new names are coming up. The tour is still healthy. I think you have the product. Just now focus on it and make it better and beat LIV, beat it out. You know what I mean? Whereas LIV should be doing the same thing. Like,
so you're basically saying each tour kind of leans into its own storylines. Yeah,
we're doing that right now. So just keep going separately. Mm-hmm. Do these majors, which gets everyone hyped. And then just fight it out and try to make, because it'll just fuel your fire to make your product great. You know, I don't know. That's what I think. Because I don't think you can honestly bring it together. I just don't think there's any way. I don't know.
I think that, this, I get that, and I think this is the sad reality, though, is that I think what we're going to see this week with the Masters is something that we've all been wanting, which is everybody back together and all the best players playing. Mm-hmm. And I think as we watch that, a lot of us as fans are going to settle in and say, like, this is what we've been missing, and say, why? Why is it that we can't just get a some sort of something in place where we can see all the guys back together more than four times per year?
What if they brought them back for the signatures?
I'm just saying, I don't know what the ultimate answer is going to be. You know, and there's the blame game continues. I saw a headline just yesterday, I think, was saying that really, and again, this shows you how much they're still taking sides, and you guys can say whether you agree with this statement or not, but I saw a headline saying, It was the greed of a few. I'm paraphrasing this. I'll find the exact headline, but the greed of a few has caused this divide and ripped it apart. And basically talking about the guys on the Liv side, they have no leg to stand on saying they wish it were different when they left and the greed was their driver of leaving. Now, I get it. A lot of money would throw those guys away. So greed is going to come to the top as being a thought that people have. I do think that there are some people who genuinely left for other opportunities for reasons other than the money. I know it's hard to say because there's so much money, but there were guys who had gripes about the ownership of their likeness. I mean, I guess that comes down to money again too. Mm-hmm. It's a hard argument. It's a tough one to make, but you know, where I'm driving at is that it still seems that as long as this has been dragged out, we're still just so far apart when you see statements like that.
Yeah, it feels that way.
It does. So what do we do? Like ultimately, what do we do? And I think what needs to happen, and I said this before, but I'll continue to kind of like ride this one through, is saying that they have to decide what they want their identity to be. Kind of like you were saying, like where just be the tour, be whatever. But once you decide, when you have, especially on the PGA Tour side, so many people involved, you know, over 200 guys with tour cards voting on what they do, you know, you need some leadership to step up, decide on a direction, and rally the troops behind that direction. Because so long as you leave everyone fragmented and in the dark, you'll never get a consensus. You know, that's exactly what we heard in those quotes earlier. And so I think that come up with a decision, whether that be Tiger in a way kind of taking his leadership on the player side, maybe it's another guy who steps up, Cantlay, whoever is involved in that. Maybe it's Jay. Maybe it's time for Jay to step down and for someone else to come in.
Maybe.
And it not even necessarily, you know, everyone has their feelings on Jay, but maybe it's not a knock on Jay. Sometimes you just need a fresh face for people to tune in and listen and hear some different ideas. But I think that we can't do this indefinitely. And I would say, I would put the personal cutoff line of saying, you got to make something happen in 2024.
Yeah.
If we continue, and I, the last person want to be doing this and talking about this in this format next year of just saying, what are we going to do? Where are we going to be? You, the longer this drags out, the more it stays divided, the more the casual fan gets put off by it. Sure. I truly believe. And I think as the casual fan gets put off, you're going to see a lot more people who only tune in four times a year for the majors. And that's the last thing we want.
Yeah, we don't want that.
For golf to be alive and sustainable, you want it where people want to watch week in and week out.
Just have Tiger play every week. Put it in his contract. Just inject him with something to keep him moving. But if you had Tiger in the field every week, you'd have ratings.
And that's the problem. We can't survive on Tiger forever. But hopefully, whether it be from his leadership or something, we see something step up and we get some answers out of this. But for as of right now, this is exactly as I said before. This is the scenario that the PGA Tour did not want. We are here. We've arrived. It's Masters Week. And yet, in a lot of ways, it is being overshadowed by this continued division. Something does need to happen. Weigh in with your thoughts in the comments and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.